Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. It is stated by many Shakespeare scholars that he crafted his character Hamlet to express his own opinions on topics that were current in the late 1500s and early 1600s. It's also stated that Shakespeare likely wrote this play in memory of his own son, Hamlet. And actually, his son's name was Hamnet, not Hamlet, but that's really pretty close. But his son died at the age of 11. So I thought for this last program on the play Hamlet, and I think you should know the official title is The Tragical History of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. So it really is listed as a history and a tragedy. But what I want to do is I want to discuss what we know about the character Hamlet from the incredible poetry that Shakespeare crafted for him to speak to us from the stage. I do think it's interesting that this summer when we had the opportunity to interview Papa Esadieu and Natalie Simpson, these were the two actors working in the play Hamlet for the Royal Shakespeare Company, that he said that the most important thing about a soliloquy is that it gives the character or the character in the play the opportunity to actually talk with the audience. And so what I'm going to be doing to kind of bring out Hamlet's character or the personality that Shakespeare crafted, I wanted to use some of those famous lines from the soliloquies, but also I want to use some from his conversations. And it is quite interesting what we can learn about Hamlet. And he is a complex character in the play, but I do believe that we can see that Shakespeare actually crafted his character to speak for himself. And if his, we'll find out that Hamlet is preoccupied with certain things, and it may show us that, well, Shakespeare was preoccupied with these same things as well. But the one thing that we can honestly say about the character of Hamlet is that he was a depressed person. And he does reveal that very early on in the play. Now, of course, what we tend to think is that, well, he's depressed because his father's dead, or he's depressed because of his mother marrying his uncle so hastily. But what we really don't know is he could be depressed from other things in his life, and we'll talk about these things as we have time today. But if you have your books in front of you, listening audience, if you go to page 15. And we'll be in Act 1, Scene 2, and we'll start at line 129. We can see that Hamlet he's really down. He's really discouraged. And it looks like there's a lot of people in Denmark that are also down and discouraged. So it could be this is just the whole tone of life for these people there. But here's what Hamlet says at his very first soliloquy. The queen's off the stage. Hamlet is there with them. They're trying to get him to not be so negative or not to be so depressed. They finally leave him alone, and then Hamlet talks to us, or he talks to the audience. Actually, Papa Esadieu said sometimes the audience will talk back, and I have a feeling that they probably did that more, in Shakespeare's time than we would do today. Especially, it would be a little hard for the English if they're stiff upper lip people. I think it would be hard for them to talk to an actor as the actor's acting on stage. But that's actually what could have happened. But notice what Hamlet says here. He says, "Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew, or that the everlasting had not fixed his cannon against self-slaughter." So here, the when we see Hamlet by himself, and he's alone, and that's one thing we could say about Hamlet. Not only is he a depressed person, he's a loner. He likes to be alone. But the first thing he says is, look, I just wish I wasn't physical. I wish I wasn't. I didn't have flesh. I wish this flesh of mine would just melt and thaw, or it would just resolve itself into a dew. You know, it's like it would just, well, evaporate. And he said, but then he makes a comment about God. He says, or that the everlasting had not fixed his canon against self-slaughter. So here, right at the outset, first thing on Hamlet's mind is he's telling us, I'm ready to commit suicide. And he goes, oh, God, God, how weary, stale, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world. And so here, Hamlet is just really, well, he's discouraged living in this world or in his world at that time. And, of course, we have many people out there today that are suffering from depression, that they consider suicide. They don't understand really what life is all about or what the purpose for life is. And, you know, this world can seem very depressing, and there are a lot of horrible things happening not only in America, they're happening all across the world, even with terrorism. There's that threat of terrorism now, but there's threat of economic crisis. You know, South American countries don't have enough food to feed their people. So there is, it is a terrible world that we live in. It's really definitely not God's world. We can't blame God for that. But he just says there, how weary, stale, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world. He says, fie on it, ah, fie, 'tis an unweeded garden. And so he's saying, if you really look at this world, it's like this garden just full of weeds, and, you know, there's, you know, these horrible, ugly weeds. They're choking out the flowers. They're choking out the beautiful blossoms, maybe on shrubbery. And so that's the way he looks at the world. He says, it's an unweeded garden that grows to seed, things rank and gross in nature. And so, in other words, the flowers are all getting crushed out, or the beautiful things are getting crushed out, but the weeds are growing rapidly, and their seeds are just being dispersed, you know, into this garden. And so it's just getting worse. It's getting more rank. It's getting, you know, this whole world is just, you know, disintegrating. And of course, you know, Shakespeare was such a genius at capturing some of these ideas, and is still very current today. He says that it should come to this, but 2 months dead, nay, not so much, not two, so excellent a king that was to this, excuse me, I've turned the page, to this Hyperion, to a satyr. So what he's saying is, look, my father's dead, and, you know, Claudius, my uncle, has taken over. And there isn't even any comparison. You know, Hamlet believed his father was a much better king, or could have, you know, stayed a much better king than Claudius will ever be. And then he goes on to say, so loving to my mother that he might not beteem the winds of heaven, visit her face too roughly. Heaven and earth must I remember. So he knows that his father really loved his mother, and he had a lot of respect for his wife. You know, just would be enraptured by her beauty. He goes, why should she hang on him as if increase of appetite had grown, but what it fed on, and yet within a month? Let me not think on it. Frailty, thy name is woman. So he knew his father loved his mother, and you know, his mother, as we talked in last week's program with the 60-plus panel, we know that she was maybe a little more of a loose woman, and she would hang on him, or she would be, you know, overtly open about her sexuality with him. And he said that she had like this passionate appetite. But yet, within a month then, she marries Claudius. And she marries her husband's brother. And this really does have Hamlet upset. But in my mind, I don't think that's enough for him to want to commit suicide. I think there's just this maybe pattern in his life where, you know, it's easy for him to get depressed. And I think, as we continue through this, I think Hamlet was a very creative person. I think he was a deep thinker. I think he did feel things deeply emotionally. And sometimes that can lead if you don't have the right balance, that can lead to, it can lead to depression. And he goes on and he says, a little month or ere those shoes were old with which she followed my poor father's body, like Niobe, all tears, why she? Oh God, a beast that once discourse of reason would have mourned longer, married with my uncle, my father's brother, but no more like my father than I to Hercules. So he's saying, I'm not even like my father. I mean, of course, we talked in the past programs about he was passed over for advancement. He wasn't considered to be the next king. And it could be, obviously, we talked about this quite a bit. It could be that, his uncle Claudius did work some programs out with the election board and got himself appointed king. Or it could be that, the election board just knew that Hamlet wasn't up to the task. And maybe he was a depressed person a lot, and that could definitely affect how you could rule as a king. But he goes on to say, he said, within a month, ere yet the salt of most unrighteous tears had left the flushing in her galled eyes, she married. Oh, most wicked speed to post with such dexterity to incestuous sheets. It is not, nor it cannot come to good. But break my heart, for I must hold my tongue. You know, he's upset about the death of his father. He's even more upset with the quick marriage of his mother to his uncle. But I still think that does leave us with a decision, or maybe the thought that maybe he was depressed even about some other things before he even had to experience the death of his father. Remember, he had to be brought back from Wittenberg to even come to the funeral. So there may have been some things going on in his life that were not so good. But it is kind of interesting that we look at him, and that's the first thing we see, that he's just deeply depressed. Of course, his father was dead, and he was in black clothes. But you get the feeling that there was something else going on in Hamlet's life that that maybe we don't know about. And it could also lend itself to this whole thing with the fact that Shakespeare wrote the play Hamlet in order to honor his son Hamnet, who had died at a very young age. So maybe Shakespeare is expressing some of his own depression, and of course he's using the great drama of the story from Denmark to get all of that out in the open. But I do think, in defense of Hamlet, he may be a depressed person, but we can see in the play that he is very interested in spiritual things, and especially the afterlife. And this does first come out, I think, very beautifully in the scene with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern when they first arrive, at Elsinore, and the king and queen have kind of set them up to find out why Hamlet is depressed. Now, in some ways, it's really begging the question, because Gertrude, as we talked about in last week's program, she knows why he's depressed. She knows that he's depressed about their hasty marriage. But if you just go to page 53, and we're going to go to Act 2, Scene 2, and we're going to start in line 273, I think this is a very beautiful, some very beautiful writing about Hamlet, or that Hamlet gets to speak to us. And it really does show that he is a deep thinker, and he does think deeply about spiritual things. Supposedly he was studying philosophy. And in this conversation, now this is not a soliloquy, but it's a conversation that he has with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. And remember, they first get there, and it's kind of like boyhood friends meet. But Hamlet is very suspicious of them, and he knows that they've been pulled in by Claudius and Gertrude to try and figure this all out. And in some ways, just for me as an observer, as a playgoer or whatever, I'm thinking, why didn't they just ask Hamlet? Why did they have to bring in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern anyway? It just doesn't make sense. But here's Hamlet tells them, he doesn't trust them. But then towards the end of this speech, he launches into this beautiful piece of poetry. And he says, what piece of work is a man? How noble in reason, how infinite in faculties, in form and moving, how express and admirable, in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god. The beauty of the world, the paragon of animals, and yet to me, what is this quintessence of dust? Man delights not me, not woman neither, though by your smiling you seem to say so. So this is like a perfect example of some of the beautiful poetry that Shakespeare does write for Hamlet to speak to us. And just think of that subject. He's thinking about man, and he's thinking about man's creation, and he's thinking about what is the purpose for man. And that is a big question still on the minds of people today. And again, it just reveals how much Shakespeare knew about these issues that are still current even today, 400 years later after his death. There's still big questions on people's mind, like what is a man? You know, what is the purpose of man? And so he even calls, the man the paragon of animals, or we're the perfect example of an animal. Well, that's a big question today, but mankind does share the flesh of an animal, but we are not animals. And Shakespeare is really bringing that out here. We're not like animals, even though we have flesh. We're noble in our reason. We have these infinite faculties. I know we have this little dog at our house that we love very much. She's just a sweet little dog, but sometimes we'll talk to her and ask her questions, and we laugh because we know she doesn't understand a word we're saying. She can't think and reason. She can give us pleasure. She can be sweet and, have fun. But, she is not like a man. And even though we share the flesh like she does, but she's not, we're not animals. We're human beings. And, of course, he goes on to say, in action, how like an angel? There's these spiritual beings out there. And he says, in apprehension, how like a god? And so, we don't need to necessarily go into that here on just the best literature, but we know that man is made in God's image. So we're made flesh, but we are really godlike, even in our minds and our thinking and our creativity, even though we certainly don't have the power or the righteousness that God has. So Shakespeare brings that out, and he brings it out through the character Hamlet. So that is really, some great poetry. So we know that Hamlet is really interested, in spiritual things, but he's also, it just seems like he's just preoccupied with death and the afterlife. And of course, he shows this in his very famous soliloquy, To Be or Not to Be. Let's just go back to Act 3, Scene 1, and we'll just go through this soliloquy here a little bit. If you remember, this scene just starts just after he's been talking to the king and the queen and Polonius. They're all trying to figure out what's wrong with him, and then it also comes on just before he has that really violent scene with Ophelia. So we can go ahead and start in line 56. This is Act 3, Scene 1, page 65. And he starts out, he says, to be or not to be, that is the question. And so what Hamlet is he's still entertaining this whole idea of suicide. He said, am I going to be or not to be? He said, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arm against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. Now, what he's not saying there, he's not saying, well, let's just face my trials. What he's saying is, why don't I just take a dagger and stab myself? And so he's not really wanting to face the trials of his life, but what he wants to do is just end his life. And that's really not a very practical way to handle the problems of life. He says, to die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that this flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep perchance, to dream. Aye, there's the rub. for in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. And so here he's preoccupied with death. He'd like to end his life. He'd like to get out of the problems he was in. And like I said, I think it's much more than just his dad dying and his mother marrying his uncle. He wants to get out of some problems, but he says, well, what's it like when I die? If I die, what's on the other side? If I go to sleep, will there be dreams over there? And so he just doesn't understand it. And so he's preoccupied with death, but he's afraid, well, to find out what's on the other side. He goes on to say, for in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. Now, that's a little hard to say, mortal coil, but what he's really talking about there is the turmoil of life. And so that would even be hard to say in that line too, by the way. Add a little humor in there. He said, when we have shuffled off this turmoil or mortal coil. So there I'm trying to do it again, and it just doesn't work sometimes. But he said, it must give us pause. There's a respect that makes calamity of so long life, for who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietest make with a bare bodkin. And so if you look at the list of problems in life, it's all negative. He doesn't say anything positive here. And so it's really, we can see that he's just really a depressed person. He's preoccupied with death. He'd like to get out. And he says, why don't I just take care of it with a bare bodkin or a knife? And he said, who would fardels bear to grunt and swear under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose born or whose region no traveler returns, puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. So he's saying is, look, and this is the human condition, is we have these problems, we have these things that we have to put up with, but what's on the other side could be worse if we go ahead and end our life. And I think that's some people that really get depressed. I think they think of those things, but then all of a sudden some people experiment with it and they go too far. And so that is really quite sad. So again, Hamlet is a deep thinker, but he's also, when he's doing these thoughts, he's really hard on himself. And that really comes out quite clearly in the play. We can just turn backwards to page 60, and we can see how he's really hard on himself. This is one of the probably the most negative of his soliloquies, where he's really talking about himself here. But this is Act 2, Scene 2, we'll start at line 487. And this is just after the players, when the acting team comes in and they do this play, and this one actor gets so emotional about what happens in the play, and Hamlet compares himself to this actor, and he's really quite negative on himself. And Hamlet starts out, he says, I so goodbye to you, now I am alone. So he's saying goodbye to the players, but then he says, now I am alone. And so he really liked being a loner, and that could have been part of his problem with depression, is he spent too much time alone. But he says, now I am alone. Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his own conceit that from her working all his visage waned, tears in his eyes, distraction in his aspect, and he said, a broken voice, all his whole function suiting with forms to his conceit, all for nothing. And he's talking about, this play was about Hecuba, for Hecuba. What's Hecuba to him, or he to her, that he should weep for her? What would he do had he the motive and the cue for passion that I have? And so he's saying, look, I'm caught in this whole situation, And I don't have near the passion that this actor has for a story. He said he would have drowned the stage with tears and cleaved the gentle ear with horrid speech, make mad the guilty and appall the free, confound the ignorant and amaze indeed the very faculties of eyes and ears, yet I. And listen to how he goes after himself. He just really just cuts his own personality down. He says, yet I, a dull and muddy, meddled rascal, peak like John of dreams, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing, no, not for the king, upon whose property and most dear life a damned defeat was made. Am I a coward? Who calls me villain, breaks my pate across, or breaks my head across, plucks off my beard and blows it in my face, tweaks me by the nose, gives me the in the throat, as deep as to the lungs, or I guess that's like giving him a throat punch. Who does me this? Ah, swoons, I should take it, for it cannot be, but I am a pigeon-livered and lack gall. And so you can see that he's really down on himself as a person. And it's really sad when people do that to themselves. And yet, you know, from what we see on the stage, he's quite a deep thinker. He's a handsome young prince. He's got a lot going for them. But, you know, he just can't act. He's a deep thinker. You know, he's very cerebral. He thinks about things, but he can't act unless he has, well, some raging emotions. And we can definitely see that in this play, is that when he acts, he does act upon emotion. Let's see if we can quickly get some of this. Let's look at Act 3, Scene 4, when he's with his mother. And, of course, when he kills Polonius, he's acting out of emotion. He's not acting out of, you know, that he thought this through. It's just he kills the man because of his emotion. And, of course, you know, this whole scene with the queen is another very, very violent scene. And I'll just pick up a little bit of this. But he acts on his emotions. They almost become raging. And then it's like he cools off quickly and is just calloused. But here at line 18, this is page 88 if you have the Pelican, is Act 3, Scene 4. Hamlet is talking very roughly to his mother. He says, come, come, sit you down. You shall not budge. You shall go not till I have set you up a glass where you may see the inner part of you. So he's going to get a mirror. That's what that glass means. He's going to get a mirror, and he's going to show her sins. And she says, what will you do? Thou wilt not murder me. Help, ho. So she's afraid. He's in such a rage, she's afraid that he's going to murder her. And then Polonius, of course, is behind a curtain, and he says, what, ho, help? And Emma says, how now, a rat, dead for a ducat, dead. And he just kills Polonius, doesn't even know who it is. And, you know, of course, we're led to believe he thinks it's Claudius. And then Polonius says, oh, I am dead. And the queen says, oh, me, what have you done? And Hamlet says, nay, I know not. It is the king? Oh, what a rash and bloody deed is this. A bloody deed, almost as bad, good mother, as kill a king and marry with his brother. And then, of course, the queen is just totally doesn't understand what he's even talking about. So Hamlet, like I said, he might be a really deep thinker. He might be creative in his thinking, but certainly he's not. He doesn't act from that thinking. He acts from wild emotions. Well, there's more that I could say about Hamlet. Probably is Shakespeare's best play, and so it's really been enjoyable to bring this to you. But next time, we will begin our discussion of Richard III. I know you will find what we have to say very exciting. So please write me any comments that you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1, and please like JBL on Facebook. That address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.